We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Lots going on today. Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. The Warriors season ends last night. The Lakers continue. They beat the Pelicans. They move on to face the Nuggets. So you got a crossroads for one team in the Bay Area with Golden State. And where do they go from here to try to become true contenders again? And then the Lakers have their hands full, Perloff, with the number two seed, but the defending champion, Denver Nuggets. So we got a lot of basketball for you. We also have a story that just dropped like an hour ago from ESPN, and that is detailing some more fallout of why Bill Belichick did not end up with a head coaching job in this cycle.
Yeah, so this is Seth Wickersham, who is really, I think, I love Seth, but he's kind of made a career of inside Patriots stories. The dude is plugged in. Him, Don Van Natta, and Jeremy Fowler did a deep dive, and basically it details all the close calls with Belichick, that the Eagles were very interested, the Cowboys maybe had some interest, and whatever all the reasons that these teams did not ultimately pursue Belichick. But then it said it came down to Atlanta. Bill Belichick had a great meeting with Arthur Blank, and then Arthur Blank did some background calls, which is what you do when you hire somebody. And apparently he got a negative review from Robert Kraft, the owner of the Patriots.
Yeah, so turns out that Blank was talking to Kraft owner to owner and said that Robert Kraft was warning Arthur Blank not to trust Bill Belichick. Oof. So Belichick had gone into these meetings saying, listen, I don't want to be the GM anymore. I just want to coach. I'm not going to try to have all the power in the building. I will work collaboratively with your top lieutenants. And they all were believing that until, this is kind of how the story makes it seem, until Robert Kraft called and said, do not trust Bill Belichick and you will never have a warm conversation with Belichick. They're saying Blank likes coaches who feel part of the family, and it wasn't going to be that way with Bill. So essentially, Robert Kraft is out there sort of negging Bill Belichick, somebody who had helped him win six Super Bowls because of the personal conflicts that they had and how it ended. Now, that's one part of it. You mentioned about the Dallas Cowboys. There is another spot in this piece where they say, you know, Belichick, his options are dwindling in terms of getting a head coaching job again. A friend said, unless it's for Jerry Jones. Mm. So the idea that Mike McCarthy is in the last year of his deal and that Belichick is going to go do some media this year and then we'll reassess the next year, this is definitely leaving the door open here between Jerry Jones and Belichick.
Maybe. I mean, Jones didn't hire him this offseason, though.
That is true. But
there's a lot of reasons people didn't hire him in this story are pretty amazing. The Eagles still love Nick Sirianni,
yeah,
according
BS.
To this report. Well, I don't know. No, I think they do. I think they like Sirianni.
Oh, because they can control Sirianni. He literally got asked in the postseason press conference, what do you do here?
But I think
it's amazing.
I think in the front office, they like him. I think they like him personally a lot. Washington wants the GM is more powerful than the coach model. That was really interesting to me. So they didn't want Belichick, even though the GM was with Belichick for, I think, a long time, at least 10 years, Adam Peters. So all these reasons are going to look real bad if they don't work out. If Washington said, no, we'd prefer not to have a strong coach, and then they go 3-14, or the Eagles lose with Nick Sirianni, I think we're going to look at this article and say, or the Cowboys with McCarthy, man, you had Belichick right there.
Absolutely.
He was dying to work for you.
Absolutely, let alone the Falcons. I mean, the Falcons were down the road on Belichick. They did multiple interviews. And apparently Arthur Blank liked him until he got the warning from Robert Kraft, and that turned them all off, according to this new story that's on ESPN. The Raiders passed because they had just hired multiple Belichick disciples, and that didn't work out. And the Titans passed because Mike Vrabel was so closely associated with Belichick, and they didn't want to go down that path again, too.
I like the future in Dallas because you could have Bailey Zappi a quarterback again next year.
Bring him back.
Dallas has a much bigger problem. Like, they don't have any players moving forward.
Well,
the
reason why the Dallas part works, and I think Dallas will eventually re-sign CeeDee Lamb and Micah Parsons, but the Dak stuff is totally up in the air. You know, the reason why this could work is because you're never going to have a bigger voice than Jerry Jones. So if Belichick is really out there saying, I don't want to be the GM, I just want to be the coach, that could actually work in Dallas. Yeah, other places it might not.
That is very obviously a lie. That's what the article also said. No one in Atlanta believed that was true. And so Jerry famously has not wanted a coach who's bigger than he is. He fired Jimmy Johnson for that reason. Maybe at the very end he tried.
Brought in Parcells.
What's that?
Brought in Parcells.
Yeah, and then he said never again. You know, look at Dave Campo and Chan Gailey and all these other guys. I don't know if he had Chan Gailey. I assume he did. But he had Jason Garrett around for 12 years. That's what the article said, that he doesn't, you know, he's loyal and he doesn't really want a big name in there. That team is, their roster is going to stink next year. I don't even think there's, Belichick can save it. Either way, this is funny. To me, the headline I think that's going to stick and be a big story for a long time is Robert Kraft betrays Belichick.
Yeah, calling teams and and having candid conversations. That's what they call it. I don't know who called who, but having candid conversations about what it's really like to work with Bill Belichick.
It's Shakespearean.
It's a bad experience.
Yeah, it's Shakespearean to just screw over the guy, stabbed him in the back, full on.
Well, apparently Robert Kraft wanted to get rid of Bill Belichick after the 2022 season, and his son talked him out of it. So they could have even parted ways even before this last disastrous season. The quote that is going to be pulled out of here from now to kingdom come is, quote, he was essentially voted off the island. And that's Bill Belichick. And now I'm wondering if he's ever going to be a head coach again. Also said he didn't want to be in California, and the Chargers were just as happy because they wanted Harbaugh anyway. But he didn't want to go cross country and didn't want to go to California. So a lot of interesting things in that article. It is Wednesday. Around here, we do something called The Great Debate. Today, inspired by the news of some all-time broadcasters calling it a career, we're asking for the greatest live call of all time. Now, because we're resetting this, I kind of want to quickly go through our own live calls again. These were our choices. Perloff, why don't you start us off?
Oh, I went with, do you believe in miracles?
Puck is still loose. 11 seconds. You've got 10 seconds. The countdown going on right now. Morrow up to Schultz. 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
Unbelievable. It's amazing how much lower Al Michaels' voice got. You know, that sounds kind of high for Al Michaels.
I mean, maybe it was the moment. I mean, that's a long time ago. It was 1980, and we still have Al Michaels. Yeah. So it's awesome.
I went with a great call from college football. It is the kick six in the Iron Bowl.
56-yarder. Does not have the leg. And Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone. He'll run it out to the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game. He ran the missed field goal back. He ran it back 109 yards. They're not going to keep him off the field tonight. Holy cow. Oh, my God. Auburn wins. Auburn has won the Iron Bowl. Auburn has won the Iron Bowl in the most unbelievable fashion you will ever see. I cannot believe it. 34-28. And we thought a miracle at Jordan-Hare was amazing. Oh, my Lord in heaven. Chris Davis just read it. 109 yards. And Auburn is going to the championship game.
They would unfortunately lose that championship game to Florida State, but that's an all-time call. You can just feel the emotion, tears in the booth. And the man who authored that incredible call was Rod Bramblett, and unfortunately, he has since passed away in a car accident. EJ, who was your greatest live call of all time, our great debate this week?
It is the one live call so synonymous with the NBA, happened in the 60s. It is the great Johnny Most with Havlicek stole the ball.
Greer's putting the ball on a play. He gets it out deep, and Havlicek steals it over the stand zone. Havlicek stole the ball. It's all over. It's all over. Johnny Havlicek is being mobbed by the fans. It's all over.
I mean, I love Johnny Most, even though I hate the Celtics. I don't know how you can. He was such a character.
You can hear him knocking over the ashtray. You know?
Oh, yeah, the ashtray is everywhere. He's probably, you know, getting the next cigar from Red Auerbach as he's making the call. I mean, that was just a time, different time in American sports. Johnny Most really kind of embodied that, so he's my pick.
Bogus is busy right now, so we'll give his, which was the Kirk Gibson home run in the World Series. This is the Jack Buck version.
Gibson swings and a fly ball to deep right field. This is going to be a home run. Unbelievable. A home Gibson, and the Dodgers have won the game 5-4. I don't believe what I just saw. I don't believe what I just saw.
Unbelievable. And the Vin Scully call also amazing on that one particular play. We're doing the greatest calls of all time. Today is our great debate. Carlos went with a very controversial selection. If you are listening to us, yes, this is a sports talk radio station and show, but he went with who?
I went with the voice of wrestling. I don't care what promotion he works for, but at the time, WWE, and this was the most iconic call that he's ever made in his long career. And no surprise, The Undertaker did win that match because Mankind was getting thrown off from hell, literally. Not once, but twice. So just good for Mick Foley that he survived that.
Yeah, Mick Foley was unbelievable, and that one changed him for a long time. So we are asking you the greatest live call ever. Mike is in Syracuse. Mike, what do you have? Mike?
Well, if you go back to 1973, two unbeaten heavyweight boxers squaring off in Kingston, Jamaica, and Howard Cosell at the mic with the Down Goes Frazier.
Here's what it sounded like.
Angie Dundee, Ali's trainer right next to me, is saying it. You may hear him. Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! The heavyweight champion is taking the mandatory eight count, and Foreman is as poised as can be in a neutral corner.
There you go. Mike, thank you so much for the phone call. I missed Howard Cosell. He was before my time, but the Down Goes Frazier, an all-timer.
Also, in the movie Ali, that's one of the best scenes when Ali's sitting there trying to get back. And he's just obsessing over beating Joe Frazier. Then George Foreman comes out of nowhere, and the people around Ali are like, uh-oh, you have a bigger problem.
Yeah, right.
His name's George Foreman.
Yeah, and then the Rumble in the Jungle, which was iconic then, and Ali's rope-a-dope on Foreman. Ty is in Boise, has got a nomination for us. Great debate, greatest live calls of all time, sports calls. Hey, Ty.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
We're doing great.
Good. I want to take you back to 1986, the 10th inning, Game 6 of the World Series with Vin Scully.
Let's hear it.
5-5 in a delirious 10th inning. Can you believe this ball game at Shea?
Oh, brother.
3-2 to Mookie Wilson. Little roller up along first, behind the bag. It gets through Buckner. Here comes Knight, and the Mets win it.
You know what's interesting about that, Ty? Thanks so much for that one, and special for a lot of people around here. But here's the thing about that. It's the call of a mistake. You know, it's very different, that call, than all the other ones. We've been doing triumphant calls. You know, Havlicek steals the ball, which I guess is a mistake. I guess that's kind of a mistake, but mine is like a kick six. Yours is...
There were mistakes made on that play.
Yeah, but like, it's not going to be Saban had too many offensive linemen out there.
Yeah.
You know, it's to be too hard to...
Well, you think of the great Larry Bird steal off Isaiah and Dumars. Was that was known for a mistake or the great play?
Yeah, you're right. Maybe because Kirk Gibson, that's also the Dennis Eckersley game. Yes. Up the home run. So, yeah, I guess there's both sides.
That's interesting.
Because it's not like Mookie Wilson hit this amazing ball.
But it's funny. I still remember it as a pot. You're right. Bill Buckner is one of the all-time sports goats because of that. Not goat isn't greatest of all time, but goat. And still, I remember it as a positive event. Like, oh, my gosh, Mets fans celebrated for years off this.
Yeah,
in fact,
well,
probably still are.
Well, kind of still dining out on that one. But, yeah. All right, so there you go. Keep them coming. The all-time greatest calls of all time, sports calls, off of a couple legendary broadcasters calling a career this week. Okay, we've got lots more for you from both the Warriors and also the Lakers. We also check in with the Cowboys. Get a little more update of reasoning behind this slow off season from one of the very, very top of the food chain in Dallas. We do that next. It's Maggie and Perloff.
Welcome back to Maggie and Perloff. So my phone's already blowing up with one question, Maggie. Should we have hired Bill Belichick? Because a new report from ESPN has the details of how Bill Belichick, the Patriots coach, did not get hired in this offseason. And they talked about a lot of teams. The one they talked about the most was the Atlanta Falcons, who, it turns out, might have got a negative review from Patriots owner Robert Kraft. But the second team that got the most ink was the Philadelphia Eagles, who have a lot of connections to Bill Belichick. They hire a lot of Bill Belichick guys. Obviously, Matt Patricia had an ill-fated stint in Philadelphia. But they decide they love Nick Sirianni. But here's the thing, Maggie. I would not have been excited for Bill Belichick as the Eagles coach. Not that the game is passing by, but they were terrible in New England last year.
Yeah.
I think it takes time for Bill Belichick to build a culture, and I don't see that happening again. I know that some of the teams that didn't hire him are going to fail, but I don't get that vibe like, oh, man, I really wish I had Bill Belichick here. I might be an idiot for this because I'm sure Nick Sirianni will screw it up big time, but I'm not, like, living in regret about not getting Bill Belichick.
Well, I think teams are going to regret it. And, you know, listen, Raheem Morris might do a great job in Atlanta. This could be one of those sliding door things,
yes,
where he ends up being the exact right person for them. And it's one of the great, you know, we do the multiverse of Maggie and Perloff on Thursdays, a what if, what could have been. And maybe, you know, this multiverse is, you don't need one because Morris is going to be the better pick. What I think is a little fascinating about this story is a couple things. One, if Robert Kraft really wanted to fire Bill Belichick after 2022, mm-hmm, maybe he has better options. You know, maybe he doesn't. You're not coming off a 4-win season. I think they won 5 games, I guess, the year before. But it hadn't gotten so bad like it did last year, where they're one of the worst teams in the NFL. They're picking 3 in the draft. And maybe his reputation is like a tiny bit more intact if they had actually fired him after 2022 as opposed to after 2023 last year.
So you're saying it could have been a favor to Belichick to fire him earlier?
Maybe, but Jonathan Kraft, the son, according to this article, stepped in and said, let's keep Belichick for another year. And then the other part of it, I'm seeing a bit of a reaction to this. Now, granted, it's just the online reaction. The idea that people are shocked that Robert Kraft would have called Arthur Blank, owner to owner, and it said, don't hire Bill Belichick because he's a gigantic pain in the butt. He's arrogant. You can't trust him, all of those things. You know, I get criticized sometimes because I'm hard on owners because I think they're ruthless people generally, because I think to make $1 billion, unless you just win a scratch-off lottery ticket, I think you generally have to be a pretty ruthless person to make that kind of money. And I'm just not surprised that an owner would be ruthless behind the scenes. I just think that's who they are. And listen, Robert Kraft can do great things for charity and have a great public image or whatever, but I also think behind the scenes it's very cutthroat. And so I'm not shocked that he would have called someone else and stabbed Belichick in the back.
But this is the opposite of cutthroat. Everyone knows how this works. Somebody calls about a former employee, even if you hated them, you say nice things. Because why would you go out of your way? You know this is going to come out. If he was ruthless, he would have said, go ahead, take Bill Belichick, have fun. There's nothing ruthless about this. I think it was being honest with a friend, which I would not have done. If somebody calls me about a former employer, I don't want that smoke. I'm just like, oh, yeah, that guy was great. Yeah, he was great to have around. Why would you give a negative review to Bill Belichick? You know that's going to come back to haunt you.
Because I think Kraft despised him at the end. I think they did. I think they put it together. They put on a nice show for the final press conference or whatever. But yeah. I think that they really despised each other.
So why share that with Arthur Blank? Because honestly, I think it hurts Robert Kraft's legacy. I think that if he had known that was going to come out, because publicly he was the opposite. He said Bilbo is great, all that. I think he would have preferred for that to be the public stance and never get deeper than that. I don't think Robert Kraft actually wanted it out there that he was saying that Bill Belichick would not be a good coach moving forward.
Oh, I think it's a little bit Kraft, too, of trying to save a little face here that he chose the wrong guy. When it was between Belichick and Brady and he chose Belichick, he got burned. Because Brady still had enough left in the tank, it turns out, to win another Super Bowl and did it easily with Tampa Bay. I think that Kraft probably feels, A, like he never got enough credit for the dynasty anyway, because why wouldn't a billionaire think that? But two, I think he's probably always a little bitter about that, I would imagine. He chose wrong.
Right? Maybe, yeah.
And I think he always said that Belichick was super arrogant. I also think the interesting part of this is saying that Belichick, the one place he could coach, maybe is Dallas.
Yeah.
Now that would be an all-time. That'd be something really, really interesting. Okay. Bogus is here with headlines. Let's do that. Got a lot of things going on today.
And not sure why this morning is the time to unveil the U.S. men's Olympic team for Paris this summer, but here we are, the 12-man group officially completed by Kawhi Leonard, which sounds an awful lot not like Jalen Brunson. It was apparently tough to get a yes out of Kawhi. The other 11 names came out a few days ago. That group included LeBron, AD, KD, Curry, Jason Tatum, and Anthony Edwards. Now, the Dream Team had 68 combined all-NBA selections back in 92. This dozen has 84 with this season's awards still to come.
Some of these guys were on the original Dream Team. Can we get Kawhi Leonard? They got older? How is this
they
possible?
Got older.
I can't believe that. And they had to convince them. It's like they had to talk them into it. If I'm the Clippers, I hate this, too, because I just maxed him out again.
I know, and you can't get him healthy on the court. This is unbelievable. Why aren't they taking anybody under 30? What's going on here, Bogus? What's your problem here?
I don't have a problem with it at all.
Take it up to Grant Hill, I guess. Steve Kerr.
I'm surprised Grant Hill's not putting on shorts and joining this team. This team is ancient.
Yeah. I did see somebody say that they should put Cooper Flagg on this team, like
yeah,
Christian Laettner. No thanks. That's a hard pass.
I don't know. They
hasn't
might
even
need
played
a guy.
College yet.
They might need a guy to play some minutes. They're so old. This is ridiculous.
I love how they're saying that it was easier, I guess, that for these guys, the older guys, to be part of this team because it's also in Paris. I'm like, what are they going to be shopping? Like, what does that mean?
What do you mean?
Easier?
Like they're more
like
used to international
sell.
Travel? Well, oh, like to get them.
They didn't
want
to go to Tokyo when the Olympics. Yeah. And so now it's in Paris. It's like, oh, I guess I can go to Hermes and I can also
play
Spain.
Well, it's a six-hour flight.
Also,
you're not that far away.
Those guys, you know, Paris.
On the East Coast.
In one of the media capitals of the world. So they can go and sell all the stuff they want to sell. Like, that's a big part of going to Team USA.
Yeah, I just think definitely LeBron James needs to move more merch.
He's trying to own a basketball team. Honestly, he probably does.
So I know that EJ's mad that Jalen Brunson. Were there younger players? There had to be guys in their 20s that were snubs. Aren't they going to need some fresh legs here?
Well, who are the young guys? They have Halliburton. They've got Booker.
Booker and Jason Tatum's not 30,
and
obviously. Anthony Edwards. And how old is Drew Holiday?
Old.
Yeah, he's
but
older.
Is he old, or is he NBA old? Like, is he 30? He's not 30. He's not well past 30, right?
He's
33. He's
all right.
Old.
Now, EJ, honest question. Who would you take off to put Brunson on?
Any of those guards should not be over Brunson. But
Halliburton's
the guy I'm taking for sure. But any of those guys should not be on the team instead of Jalen Brunson. It's just, and we can talk about team fit or whatever. Jalen Brunson has been the best American basketball player in the NBA this year. And the only person you can argue with him is Jason Tatum. He's carried a Knicks team that is not that great in terms of talent because of the injuries they've had, and he's been awesome. I think the idea that Grant Hill put together LeBron's best friends and LeBron pretty much earmarked like 9 roster spots as soon as they lost to Canada. Like, the buzzer didn't sound, and then you got the Woj report being like, LeBron already has 9 commitments to Team USA. I mean, that was ridiculous.
Well, I don't think the issue is who deserves to be on there. I think there's a real issue. Is this team good enough to easily win? Because LeBron skewed so old. What if these guys get hurt? Or I mean, I just don't think this team is that great.
Well, Bam Adebayo is another young player who's on
this
team.
But he's not that good.
Well, here's the question. Is Kawhi Leonard going to play, 30 seconds a game? I mean, no chance he's going to be playing any major minutes, right?
Yeah, so who is playing your major minutes? Are you going to let Tatum play a ton of minutes and have these Hall of Famers on the bench?
No, it's going to be the picture of health and Kevin Durant and Joel Embiid.
Yeah, I know.
Might as well get Anthony
Davis out there. Like, his back is going to last. It feels like this is a risky team. Like, they could fall apart and lose to an international team.
I mean, they're extremely talented, and they're still going to be the very heavy favorites to win gold. But I do think that some of these teams that are built more like real teams, like, there is no doubt, there's no pecking order of who the ball's going to when Serbia plays, okay?
Yeah.
That team is like playing the Nuggets. It's going to be the exact same as it would be if they were in the NBA, so there comes chemistry with that. With this team, where you have a bunch of all-stars in a one-game situation, which I think people forget about, like, you have the pool play, but then you're in one-game situation and anything could happen. And Jokic or Giannis is on the other side, who knows what could happen.
Bogus, what else we got?
Let's get focused now on the play-in. The Lakers advancing after a trip to New Orleans.
Here is Reeves dribbling right all the way to the middle. D'Lo for 3. Got it! Huge 3 for Russell. Puts the Lakers up by 4.
And they won by 4, 110-106, to earn the 7 seed in a first-round date with the Nuggets. The highlight from John Ireland on Lakers Radio. Now, there were some who thought the Lakers should lose this game so they could avoid Denver in round 1. Your thoughts, Darvin Ham?
Saying what again?
I'd be better off if you guys lost this game to avoid Denver in the first round to play.
Insane asylum sources say.
Sure.
Nah. If you
it wasn't sourced. It wasn't.
Okay.
It was just chatter.
Just someone that just got out of the insane asylum.
The insane asylum to suggest that we should lose on purpose to get away from the Nuggets.
I mean, he's not mincing words there.
No, listen, it would have been crazy, but let's not pretend like teams don't schedule losses, you know?
They do.
Not the play-in.
Yeah. No, and they never were. But I'll be honest, when LeBron started jacking threes, I know he was tired at the end when he settles for threes like that. We've seen it happen with him when he needs a rest. But it did let New Orleans back in the game when they were down 18.
I mean, if they saw the latter game with the way the Kings were shooting against the Warriors—
face of the ladder game makes it like a ladder match.
They saw the Vizz up there.
I mean, I think the Kings would have been a real, real problem for LeBron in this next game. In fact, it'd probably be a 1-point spread Lakers, but that'd be tough. There's no way they were going to risk that. I can't even believe we were thinking that at the time. And I actually gave it a lot of thought to avoid Denver.
Yeah, definitely.
But they... losing in the play-in is not good.
Manipulate their spot a lot. It's not a new phenomenon. It's very risky in a play-in situation. I'll grant you that. But we see it happen all the time where teams are trying to line their postseason up in a certain way.
Right, but this particular matchup would have been death for them. They would have lost to the Kings because the Kings always beat them too. Going back 2 years now.
One of the funny things about the play-in situation, talking about, you know, where the team should be tanking the play-in, the fact that we don't really have a lot of history with the play-in. So we don't really know how teams are going to play it. Like, there was a point last night, Reggie Miller, the game, obviously a very good game last night, and he's like, this is what the play-in is supposed to be all about. I'm like, what is the play-in all about? This is like the third year we've done this. I don't know what the play-in is about. Like, is it about like playoff intensity? I mean, I guess, but like,
yeah, what's Bulls Hawks about?
Right. Like,
but now we know the play-in teams can definitely make the finals because we had the Heat, and then the Lakers made the conference finals last year. Like, it's legit. Like, somebody we're seeing this weekend could be alive for a long time.
Yeah, it's like the first four in the NCAA tournament. Like, those teams can go to the Sweet 16 now. It's not just a write-off. Wait, didn't Reggie have another moment last night?
We should probably get to that.
Bogush, I don't know if this was part of your update.
It was not, so feel free.
What do we have? Reggie Miller, this is the end of the Lakers-Pels game when it's down to free throws now, and to credit Anthony Davis, hit him to put the... Lakers ahead. Reggie with some interesting game strategy.
Here's things that you talk about on the bus as players. If he makes the first one, you're up three. Do you try to purposely miss the second one, knowing that they don't have any timeouts?
They have no timeouts.
And they've got to go coast to coast, because as soon as you miss it, time is going to start as soon as it's touched. Or do you just make them both, be up four, and game over? These are things that are discussed as teams. Yeah.
Lakers is 6-8. His Lakers lead by 2.
How much time was left on the clock at that point?
3 seconds.
Yeah, like 2.7 or 3, something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great strategy.
Only bad teams discuss that kind of strategy, Reggie Miller.
No, I get it. Sometimes, you know, do you want the choice that keeps the game alive, or do you want the win? The fact that he goes...
Who can say?
He obviously, like, figured out halfway through his take that this is nonsense. He goes, do you want to go 4 and game over? Wait, what?
delicious cheesecake or lima beans?
Yeah. It's like,
was he thinking about, like, the LJ moment with the getting fouled on a 3-point shot? And
so
that's
there,
it?
There is an actual basketball dilemma that I think he thought he was going to, but he didn't realize the score, because me and my brother talk about this all the time. Now, if you have a shot where you can miss it and you're only up 2, do you miss it when there's only 1 second left?
Yes.
And make them like grab the rebound and try to do some crazy shot? Or do you make it and then let them inbound where they can do a play?
Right.
That is a real thing. That is a basketball debate. Going up 4 instead of going up 3 when there's no 4-point shot currently in the NBA seems like a no-brainer, but to Reggie, it wasn't last night.
I also heard him say, I think at the end of the first quarter, there were 0.4 seconds left on the clock. Whoever was inbounding was 94 feet away, and he said, don't foul here.
Yep.
They weren't going to do anything with the ball to necessitate being fouled.
By the way, that exact play, Gabe Vincent handed the ball to the official, and I actually breathed a sigh of relief. I'm like, oh, thank God that the Pelicans didn't foul. It was unbelievable. Did you have the same relief? I'm like, oh, this could be tense. Don't screw this up.
Those things usually make me think that I'm the dumb one. Yeah. When I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. So when Gabe gave the ball, I'm like, oh, no, okay, I was right. Reggie was wrong. I needed Gabe Vincent to just take the inbound and do nothing with it. So I like the world was correct in my head.
But the irony was there was Zion got fouled with 0.3 seconds left in one quarter, and he hit a shot at the end of the half. So there were two like buzzer beaters at the end of quarters.
Yeah,
so.
But Reggie said his before that, right? Yeah. Like he didn't learn from the original danger.
It was one of the most bizarre comments. Ugh. But the 4.1 is going to go down. Reggie's going to have trouble getting past that
when
one.
When he did
I think.
Say, "Do you want to just hit this and win the game?" I was like, "Well,
sounds good."
Well, I also like this. He started
you never
out the
know
whole
playing.
He started this whole thing. This is when guys are on the bus talking. We had no direction. I had no idea. I was like, "What are they talking about? Instagram models?" I mean, what do you think they actually? What would you talk about if you were an NBA player? You're not talking about that, are you?
I mean, if you feel no, you're talking about if the coach is screwing you over or a bad call or probably. Something has to do with your contract.
Yeah.
I imagine that's
who's waiting at the hotel the next stop. Yeah. What time are we going to land? That kind of stuff.
You know who I blame?
Money owed in the poker game on the flight.
Yep. I blame the J.J. Redick LeBron podcast. Everyone's trying to outsmart everybody else. And just, it's basketball. It's not it's the same thing with football. It's not rocket science. It's a game.
Here's a question. How many current NBA players who do not have a podcast themselves are actually listening to the LeBron, J.J. Redick, red wine infused all basketball talk pod.
Zero.
No shot.
Zero. I love the podcast.
You think
John
Morant's listening to this or Zion?
No.
I would need those players that don't have a podcast.
I'll say point. It might be 8 people. Can I add? Give you a? Well, you said someone without a podcast. I would have said Draymond loves LeBron James, so he's probably
people who are podcasting.
He's downloaded. He's subscribed. He's done everything necessary.
Well, those guys need content, so someone's listening and aggregating it for you.
No. I'm sure they see it on social media, though. They know. They're very well aware of this ridiculous podcast.
I know, but the clips they put on social media are like 5 minutes long. Are you telling me that guys are hanging around for that?
I think there's an awareness of what JJ and LeBron are doing. Like, I don't actually, I've never listened to it, and I fully loathe it, not even knowing the content.
Fully loathe it. That's the name of our new podcast, Fully Loathed.
That's a great question. What do actually, talk about, who cares what they talk about on the bus? Do they listen to any podcast?
Well, I don't want to be like totally stereotypical. I bet a lot of them were into this rap beef that's going on now because the world is into this. The Drake, J. Cole.
I'm into it.
Yeah. Kendrick. Yeah.
Is that why you're taking paintings off your wall, EJ?
Yes. Oh, you saw that on TikTok, yeah.
I did.
Yeah, well, painting was cover art, but yes. J. Cole had to come off the wall because of some of the stuff he did.
AJ was very, very personally offended
that I mentioned it in two pre-production meetings.
Yeah, so we still didn't bite on it. That basically J. Cole laid down the sword and would not participate in the rap beef.
Has he responded yet to your diss?
No.
No?
I had plenty of comments, though, being like, J. Cole ain't going to see this, bro. I'm like, I don't care, bro. I don't care.
TikTokers ruthless. They all are. Bogus, anything else?
I don't think I actually said that the Pelicans lost to the Lakers last night, and then the Kings beat the Warriors 118-94. So the Warriors are done. The Pelicans stay where they are. The Kings go to them. They play on Friday night. The winner is the 8th seed, and they get the Thunder in round one. The East play-in takes over tonight. The Sixers and Heat decide the 7th seed in Philly. Then the Bulls and Hawks play in Chicago. The winner of that one gets the loser of the first game on Friday night as well. Two extra inning baseball games last night. The Diamondbacks outscored the Cubs 12-11 in 10 in Arizona, and the Rays beat the Angels in 13-7-6, and the Washington Capitals clinched the final playoff spot in the NHL's Eastern Conference, a 2-1 win in Philadelphia. And speaking of pseudo-rap battles, Taylor Swift and Kim Kardashian are not friends, and Adam Schefter thinks that's one of the reasons why Odell Beckham Jr. might not end up as a Kansas City Chief, because Taylor and Travis would not let Kim enter their
stratosphere?
Yeah, in Arrowhead.
We've got the sound. Let's hear it.
There would be two dominant personalities, female personalities, that don't necessarily coexist, that have what one person described as a big beef between the two of them. Can't do it. They can't sign Odell Beckham Jr. And I'll tell you this, they have talked to him in recent years. He has approached them. They have approached him. There have been conversations between those two particular parties. But
interesting.
Can't go anywhere this year for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is the big beef that exists between Kim Kardashian and Taylor. Who would have thought?
Good for Taylor.
And then Adam Schefter died.
Schefter is like air quotes reporting this with like he's, you know, like it's the Vikings trading up to 4 to get J.J. McCarthy.
He's shocked.
He is so tickled by that story.
Yeah, he
like
is.
When Perloff was like, "You gotta listen to this Adam Schefter podcast." I love Schefter, but I was like, "Oh, how good could it sound be?" But then he's like, "I can't believe it. Who would have thought? I mean, a beef? Taylor Swift and Kim Kardashian. I mean, not Odell Beckham can't be a Chief. Oh my God!" I'm like, I've never heard Schefter talk at this octave ever. He talks 24/7.
Also, it made me think, wow, Schefter's life might be a lot more boring than we thought. You know, talking to all these GMs and coaches all the time and getting all this information must be pretty milquetoast if this is what gets him going.
And this is Kanye, really, right? Kanye and Kim K versus Taylor?
Yes.
Yes.
This goes back to a lot.
Years.
Right.
But the last one.
A song called Famous, and then they recorded Taylor, exactly. And it seemed like she was giving a permission, and then they released the recording, and it got bad. Anywho.
I'm team Taylor on that, by the way. 1,000%.
Yeah, big time.
Well, it's funny because she's like, Taylor said, I had to move to a foreign country and sort of like hide out for a little bit. It's like, you're living in London, kind of dating this really famous actor hiding out in like,
you mean she wasn't in Kazakhstan?
Yeah, right. Like,
she didn't go to Sokovia with Scarlet Witch?
I mean, and
Pietro?
I'm actually shocked she wasn't in that movie you made me watch. Everyone else under the sun was. Thank you, Bogish.
My pleasure, Maggie.
So I guess no Odell Beckham to Kansas City is the bottom line.
I think the Chiefs will be fine.
All right. Well, they might not have Rashee Rice for a while. We come back with a very unique draft strategy by one team looking for a franchise quarterback. So we get to that in just a moment. It's Maggie and Perloff.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Don't move. Welcome back. Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. Man, it's been a really fun show. I thought that this was a very unique strategy by the Washington Commanders, Perloff. And maybe it's just the opportunity, but they're doing something really unique. I've never heard of this. They are having all four of the top quarterback prospects outside of Caleb Williams, the other top, I guess, so the four of the top five. They're
right.
Having these guys all in at the same time to do interviews. Now, according to Mike Garofolo of NFL Media, it started last night with like an outing to Topgolf.
Yeah.
And now it's going to continue today to meetings. I don't even know if they're working out. It's more just meetings and getting to know guys and seeing how they interact with each other.
Yeah. Well, it's also it's all their top 30 visits are all there. So it's 25 players.
Oh,
or something.
Is that right? Okay.
So it's the entire draft class. I mean, listen, Topgolf sounds fun to me. What it says to me that these player visits are not what we think they are for Washington. And I always suspected this, that player visits are deceiving. Like, you decide who you want off the tape and maybe don't put as much into that player visit as we think.
Well,
because a lot of times, like, teams don't visit with guys and they draft them.
But not quarterbacks. Like, I feel like quarterback, maybe there's a couple instances here and there of a team. You're trying to find a franchise quarterback, especially Washington. You have a lot at stake here. New ownership group, new front office, new head coach. You know, you brought Cliff Kingsbury in, so a high-profile offensive coordinator. Dan Quinn's your head coach. You're picking second overall. You really need to get this thing right. And if this is a strategy that works, bringing all the guys in sort of together and kind of putting them all next to each other and getting a vibe, I guess, I think you could see more teams start to do something. You almost get like a mini scouting combine, just, you know, the interview portion in your building.
Yeah, I'm not sure that they've said exactly that that's their strategy. No one's actually talked to Washington about why they're doing like this. I'm not sure, because the fact that everybody's there must be something bigger going on. I don't think it's like, oh, this is, let's see who's the alpha in this group. You think that's what it is? Because I think it's more like, I don't know why they're doing this, but I think they have this idea, we want to knock out all these visits once so we can start getting down to the individual work. I do not understand it. Also, it doesn't mean that they're not doing other stuff with these guys.
Oh, definitely. I think it's something that if Washington ends up getting the guy, I think you're going to see other teams be like, huh, maybe that's a good thing for us to copy, because it's a copycat league and because nobody has figured out a surefire foolproof way to pick a quarterback in the draft. It's still such a crapshoot.
Yeah, and I think people there. they're not going to copy this method. If they happen to get Jaden Daniels and he's awesome, they're not going to be like, oh, well, that's how they got him. Kind of like C.J. Stroud fell to Houston last year. No one knew that was going to work. Obviously, Houston reportedly wanted Bryce Young, got C.J. Stroud, and he was awesome.
No, but
so there's no rhyme or reason to any of that.
Again, but remember, it was the cognitive test or whatever that kind of dinged C.J. Stroud. And I bet
dinged him, but it didn't ding him at all, it turned out.
Right, but I guess, like, I don't think anyone's going to use that again. Like, I doubt that that test where C.J. Stroud did poorly on it, and if there were any kind of conclusions made, then it's not going to get used again.
Did they not use it again this year?
I don't know. I'm just saying, I think it's such a reactionary league, and everyone's looking for this certain type of edge.
Yeah.
And if they didn't find it with the S2 test, I think they would move on. Quickly, let's update our poll. We asked you today at Maggie and Pearl, which you can find on Twitter, what should the Warriors do now? So the Warriors lost last night to the Sacramento Kings. Season is over. The options were run it back or blow it up. 89% say blow it up. Are we seeing a little fatigue here? I know they won the title 2 years ago, but I wonder if this is Warrior fans saying, listen, this is as far as it's come with this core. You need something really different here, radically different, if you're going to challenge in what has become an ever-increasingly competitive Western Conference.
I mean, I think it'd be a shame. Because blow it up means maybe getting to the play-in again. I mean, I would hate for them to go totally young and just throw away the last couple years of Steph. Like, they gotta do something. They gotta try something, right? Or blow it up. I'm not sure exactly. People mean blow it up, it means basically rebuild.
I think. I mean, when you blow it up, you
blow it up. So let Steph walk out?
Well, so here's the thing, right? I saw our pal Chris Mannix put this out, that the Boston Celtics did this when they could have tried to keep it going with the Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, you know, Ray Allen situation. Didn't do it. Didn't try to squeeze the last couple years out. Instead, traded those guys. Got a haul back, and that is essentially, those draft picks are now setting up the current Celtics team with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Now, listen, you've got to get some real suckers to give you unprotected picks. You got to find people who are going to want to trade out of the number one pick, like your 76ers did Pearl off, and that's what handed Tatum to the to Boston. But
wow, that was,
you could
that
do
was,
that.
That was way after. That was the Markelle Fultz. They were, yeah. Sixers wanted Markelle Fultz. The Celtics wanted Tatum. Don't even get me started. Anyway, but here's the thing, though. That was three guys. Clay is a free agent, so he's, yep. What are you trading? Who are you bringing in? You really think they're not getting rid of Steph? That's the, when you say, if you rephrase the poll, would you get rid of Steph? What do you think the results would be?
I think it's going to be more at Steph's favor. Like, he would have to sign off on this. He would have to say, they're not just going to come in one day and be like, Steph, we're trading you to Dallas. You know, he's going to have to be the guy who says, I think we've come as far as we can go. And I don't know if that's going to happen right now, but I know this. I don't love the run it back situation. I don't love, you know, bringing Clay back and just keeping things going here and hoping your young guys take this giant step forward. Again, I don't know if it's a guarantee they're going to, it's all going to click while Steph's still in his prime.
Would you consider a full rebuild? Just like rip the Band-Aid and say, this is it. Let's just start over. It should probably be like a 4-year window.
I mean, I might have to consider it. I might. If this is my team and this is how good I think I can be, and I'm 10th place, on the road playing the Kings in a play-in game. That's not awesome.
I just don't think this is a team that can win 35 games. I just don't think that the Warriors would accept that. I don't think, like, get into next year's draft like that. That's not the Warriors. You can't have Curry and start playing for a lottery pick, right?
No. Like, that's the thing. And
that's what rebuild it, tear down.
That's a blow it up. And that's why I'm advocating for them to really do some kind of facelift here to try to find another star to put with Curry and try to maneuver this as best as you can, because you have the incentive here by other stars to tell their team, I want to leave and I want to go play with Steph Curry. If this was a different league, if this is the NFL, you know, you can't dictate where you're going. But in the NBA, you can. And if you have enough power, you can dictate where you want to go.
Yeah, but then you're going to get stuck with a Russell Westbrook or a James Harden or a Kevin Durant or a guy way past his prime, which has its downside. I'll tell you the best thing, Maggie, trust in Kuminga, trust in Moody, trust in Pods, trust in these young guys. They're young. They could get much better. I think those guys are pretty good. Maybe Kuminga becomes a star even. Isn't that something? I mean, he could be an all-star by next year.
I know, but you're giving me maybes. You know, you're giving me hopes and wishes as opposed to how are we going to
come? A 38-year-old guy worth $55 million a year will play 32 games? That's, I think mine's a little better.
Maybe. Okay, that's a show. Thank you, EJ Stewart. Thank you to Carlos Ortiz. Thank you to Andrew Bogish. Thank you to Andrew Kaplan, the Weedos and Coffee Drinkers. You guys were on it today. Appreciate you so much. We're back tomorrow. It's Maggie and Perloff, Infinity Sports Network.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.